Hey, Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to start looking at some of the best moments in franchise history. We have three great episodes dedicated to that this week. A bunch of really cool, interesting little things you might have not even been alive for. So we certainly were alive for some of them. But when we look back, these are some of the most important things we think of in Cavs history. On today's show, that's going to be getting the number one and number four picks in the 2011 lottery, aka the Kyrie and Tristan draft. There's also winning the Andrew Wiggins lottery and sort of everything going on with that. And then lastly, because I think it's fitting having us talk about picking Kyrie, the Kyrie Irving shot to seal and win Game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, or Daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the cue.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots, Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I was listening in while Chris was recording the cold open for this episode, and like, I get this joke off while it's on my mind. We talked about how some people weren't even alive. A lot of kids were probably conceived after Kyrie made that shot, so a lot of people were alive because of what we're going to be talking about now. But no, I'm doing good. How's Dave treating you? You've been texting me your thoughts as you've been going through
without
it.
Without going into detail, that will get us rated as an explicit podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. The milking episode was quite a trip.
That's like comedically, that's like probably one of the funnier, like the funniest episodes, because it's awkward and kind of just like dark and perverse the whole time.
The opening of that episode is one of the most perverse, dark things. It's like David Fincher perverted if it was like also like college frat boy humor.
Oh yeah, exactly. But no, just the payoff for that joke. Like I told you, when, if you know, you know, when Mike, Dave's roommate, opens the garage door, like I was crying. I was laughing so hard. And you said the thrift shop joke, it really got you too, with Macklemore in the second episode. And when you're like, yeah, episode two is pretty good, I'm like, which one was that? That I remembered he had to perform a concert for a child.
Which was an amazing setup. That's like an amazing setup.
Yeah. And the more so that that's his first live show ever. So
yes. And then it gets like, ruined because Macklemore shows up. And it's not even like the, like when he gets to say thrift shop and like it stops, that's a very, the Macklemore song that's most famous, but it's also just like,
I think he said it's 25 cents.
Yeah,
or whatever.
And, but like, just his face line is so dejected when he has to say thrift shop.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good show. There's going to be some episodes, if you keep watching, that have a lot of emotional punch with them. Hype Man, I know, that's the last one I watched.
That made me really quite, I'm more invested in the Gata character now as a result of that episode.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I thought that was a really good episode. They did a good job touching on just the aspect of mental health and bipolar disorder and like the stigmas that are associated with it. And just, I don't know how many years back it was, because in that time, like, you, it's not as accepted now. Like, I feel like if you filmed this show maybe two or three years ago, I don't think they'd give the same reaction to saying like, oh no, thanks for sharing, like we really appreciate that, like that still makes you you. Like, if you told somebody you were bipolar in just such a short window, it would definitely get a different reaction. And yeah, no, I'm glad you're enjoying it.
One other Dave question before we get on to other stuff here. For you, did it help you with the show? Like, it helped me that Taco from Odd Future is in this and he's like a main character in this? Because when I see that Taco's on there, I'm just like, I'm a big old school Odd Future fan. Some of those old records are incredible. Some of the stuff that group really did and the creativity of that era is just very locked in for a certain part of my life, and Taco's just like a really random fun part of that. And the fact that he's on the show acting and not just like as himself, like with the Young Thug cameo is great, the Trippy Red one is pretty weird. I don't think that one's quite as effective, but the Young Thug one is hilarious to me. And all of these, all of the rapper cameos so far have been pretty good. The YG one was quite hilarious. In the pilot, probably I think my favorite part of the pilot is the Dave YG kind of interactions in the studio, but with the rap.
Yeah,
that's good, especially when he gets the one text and he's like, "Damn it!" Does it Taco being in this work for me? Does it work for you in the same way?
Yeah, it does. I think like you said, like his past and history like helped me acclimate to the show, obviously, but it's just funny you mention that because there will be a episode focused on Taco's character, like just centralized on him, and there's one scene where Earthquake by Tyler the Creator plays in the background, and shout out to friend of the pod Ty Windish, he texted me, he's just like, lol, Taco's still famous for being Tyler's friend and only being Tyler's friend, and I'm like, yep. You can never chase that stigma. So I wonder if that was like an on the nose a bit joke that they, or an homage they made to the fact that that's something Taco's always had against him, is just like Tyler the Creator just kind of drug him around everywhere and that's how he gained prominence. But whatever, it's a good show. I really enjoy it. I really wish Atlanta would come back, because that's what it makes me want to watch even more.
I have not, without having finished Dave, but just knowing what Atlanta does, and I actually, Atlanta's better. I feel very sure about that, because Atlanta's doing a little more in terms of what it's commenting on, and like something like Teddy Perkins, something like The Woods, it's at another level of a Davis, but I quite enjoy Dave. But if you've watched Dave and you haven't watched Atlanta, you should go watch Atlanta.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Atlanta's like mastercraft.
Like if you like Gator,
Donald Glover's just,
you will love Darius.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty fair. And it just goes back to my point that Donald Glover is one of the most talented human beings on this planet, I think, other than playing Lando Calrissian.
That movie's not his job. Fault.
No, it's like Ron Howard and just how it was a Frankenstein mishmash. It's
the mouse's fault. That's my take on that. The meddling of that movie is wild.
I agree with that, but it also felt like Donald Glover was just trying to impersonate Lando Calrissian the whole time, and I'm like, you could just... It just like, I don't know. That's how it felt. But We could talk Star Wars all day, but we should talk about the namesake of this podcast, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and we're taking a trip back to the past. After suffering through watching Ryan Hollins and Sasha Kaun and Antoine Jameson, I was at this game, actually put up like 47 points in an overtime loss to the Milwaukee Bucks, where I think Ersan Ilyasova, Carlos Arroyo, I think, was playing for them. I don't remember, but I'm going to look ignorant now, but he has a dragon tattoo on his back, and it wasn't Andre Kirilenko, but he absolutely smoked the Cavs. Like, it was just dreadful basketball, and Mo Williams was traded to the Clippers. The Cavs, like you touched on in the open, were rewarded with the first pick in the draft, thanks to the Los Angeles Clippers for taking on Baron Davis's contract, and the fourth pick in the draft with Tristan Thompson, and... Yeah, no, this is a huge moment in the franchise's history, and, you know, a huge relief as well, because this was the first true year after LeBron, and it was agonizing to watch this team go out there and quote-unquote try their best. But this was the beginning of something great, and arguably the best point guard in franchise history, and one of the most prominent members of franchise history, and Kyrie Irving's obviously the point guard, but Tristan Thompson is the most prominent figures. Like, those two came out of this draft and were a result of the suffering that, Chris, I feel like you also watched a lot of I did. And it was I watched every game of that losing streak, man. And when they beat the Clippers in overtime, it was like winning a playoff series. It felt like at the time for me, just because it was so dreadful. And there's a lot I can get into on this, but yeah, no, this is like the reward for all the suffering. Maybe it was a little bit of a NBA finagling to reward the Cavs for losing LeBron to Miami. But yeah, no, this is the start in building towards a championship roster. And 5 years later, which is surreal to think that it took the Cavs 5 years from that point to win a championship, because at that time, if you told me that, I would have told you you're lying. There's no way.
No, absolutely. But I think just when I look back at this draft, and obviously Tristan is still on the team. He may not be for much longer, unfortunately. Kyrie, obviously, we will get into. There's a what if we coming up across the network. I think the Kyrie exit is one of the things we will almost certainly do a full episode on, that because it's just a big, big transition for him. But if you look at this draft.
Oh, yeah.
The Cavs did very well in this top five. So the top five of this draft is Kyrie, Derek Williams, Enes Kanter, Tristan Thompson, Jonas Valanciunas. As you go down, some of the other notable names that ended up working include Brandon Knight, Kemba Walker, Klay Thompson, Jimmy Butler is picked at the end of the first round, Nikola Vucevic, Kawhi Leonard is the 15th pick in this draft, Tobias Harris, Giannis Antetokounmpo had a kind of moment in the NBA, Nikola Mirotic had a moment in the NBA, Reggie Jackson, et cetera. There's a lot of good. Corey Joseph is in this draft. Chandler Parsons is in this draft.
I remember when this draft class was coming around back in 2011, people were saying, like, this is a bad draft class. And, like, no, there's a lot of solid players that have come out of this draft class.
I'm no, sorry, Isaiah Thomas is the last pick in this draft. And for all of Cavs, the people that have issues with Isaiah, and I think there's fair frustration there, like, Isaiah at his peak was, like, a very good player. Had a couple of really, really good seasons. But when you look at the Cavs, like, obviously, I think on a redraft, like, the one it's going Kawhi, Jimmy, Klay, and with Kawhi number one in some order, Kyrie is probably the fourth guy you're taking in this draft, I think, either three or four. But for the Cavs, you come away.
I'd say that.
And obviously, they did know LeBron was coming back. There's a lot of stuff with Kyrie the first couple of years. There's a lot of, we weren't sure how good Tristan was the first couple of years. And there's just a little bit of uncertainty because they weren't really winning basketball games. And we weren't seeing the results turn in from two guys that obviously work. For them to get two guys who were going to matter on the title team, considering the next year they did not, considering they took Bennett and did not get a guy, and like this, the picks after this don't really result in anything. It's so important, not even just from the title standpoint, but just developing a competent team again. It'd be crazy to think what happens if they don't do this correctly. Like, what if they go Derek Williams at one and take like Jan Vesely at four, something that's seemingly in the realm of possibility, and just go full galaxy brain and really mess this up? This would have messed up so many things. And it was, I mean, really, in terms of getting lucky enough to win the Kyrie lottery, that the odds of that were very low considering where that Clippers pick should have been and their own pick being four. It's just, this could have worked out in so many different ways that weren't as good. You know, maybe if you're picking at 11, you get Klay Thompson and stuff like that. Like, there are certain other circumstances that would have been interesting to think about. But in terms of what Kyrie meant for a while, for how good, for how fun he was, for how important Tristan has been, just that happening really set the stage for everything else to come, even if we didn't totally realize the scope of that yet. And I don't think the 2011 draft is, for me, you know, the getting Price and stuff late in the 80s is certainly up there. I think Austin Carr, the bat picking him obviously has a lot of symbolism considering what he means to the franchise as Mr. quote unquote Mr. Cavalier. The LeBron draft obviously will be the most important, but this has to be a top. I would say it's the second most important Cavs draft of all time.
Yeah, other than 03, this is probably the second best. And there's like you said, there's a lot of hypotheticals here. My good friend, and I think, didn't Hooper say the same thing, that like my good friend really wanted the Cavs to take Derek Williams first overall and then take Kemba at four or Brandon Knight at four and then move forward with that? Like, there were a lot of scenarios going on. And the Anthony Bennett draft kind of is the polar opposite in terms of just crap across the board, besides, like, you know, Victor Oladipo and Giannis. But this draft, like, you could have made a justifiable case for a lot of those players number one overall, but like at a redraft, I still firmly stand in the stance that, yeah, Kawhi Leonard, if you had the power of hindsight and he was able to develop into the player he was, yeah, you take him first and never look back, because he is arguably the best player in the league next to LeBron and Anthony Davis and Steph Curry, if you really want to get into the nitty-gritty of it. But I also think that Kawhi Leonard wouldn't be the player he is today if he didn't end up in San Antonio, because that was the perfect team to trade for him, because Chip England fixed his jump shot and kind of just more or less helped build him, and like putting him in a situation where he could play alongside Manu and Tim and Tony Parker, just like ideal across the board for a rookie player to really grow and develop and flourish. And I think if Kawhi didn't end up in San Antonio and he stuck in Indiana with Paul George, I don't think it really would have worked out the same way for him career wise. But yeah, no, I actually, this is a fun mental game for those at home if you want to play along with me. I sometimes, like when Chris and I did that redraft episode, like it's a fun thought exercise to think about who the Cavs should draft, because Tristan is the best pick in terms, especially if you like want to compare him to Jonas, especially Jan Yet Vesely and Bismack Biyombo, like big men. And I mean, Enes Kanter selected third overall, but he happened to fall to four. Like, those are big men in that range that Tristan was selected around, like, you could still just throw caution to the wind and just draft Klay Thompson as the other option. But I mean, there were concerns for him coming out of Washington State with, I believe, an injury history. But no, like a pairing of Kyrie and Klay would be absolutely absurd. But no, this is the two best picks. I firmly believe that. And yeah, like you said, this is, you could easily make a case for this being the second most important draft class in Cavs history because it did so much for them long term.
When you're thinking about young Kyrie, young Tristan, I think my biggest memory of young Tristan, just because for some reason it sticks to me, is the Lee Jenkins story about him switching hands, which obviously didn't really manifest in anything meaningful. But do you have a favorite young Kyrie mm-hmm. moment?
Young Kyrie moment. That shot against Toronto. That was absolutely absurd.
3-1. Now down to 5 seconds. He's got to go to work. Sizing up Anderson. Long three. The ball! Kyrie Irving! I cannot believe you've done it again! 0.7 left. Timeout, Toronto!
I think mine...
That game-winning shot.
I think mine's him destroying Brandon Knight in the Rising Stars game.
Maybe you make a move with him right now to try and get... They probably could use like an athletic, long 2-3, 3-2 type of guy to defend other teams. Small forwards.
Kyrie. Oh, no! Going to work on Brandon Knight.
Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no! It is nothing that you would rather do in an All-Star game but to cross someone over, make them fall, and hit the jump shot.
What a move by Kyrie Irving.
That too. I mean, Brandon Knight had a... Did he get dunked on DeAndre in the same year?
He's had a lot of rough... Been on the end of a lot of rough highlights.
He's been on the... Yeah, he's just kind of had a rough career in general. Like, shout out to Brandon Knight. Overall, good guy. Former Cavalier. Can say that now. But... No, my favorite Kyrie moment is that game winner against Toronto. It helps when Fred McLeod is like the best hype man possible for an exciting moment. Like that was great, but yeah, no, him destroying Brandon Knight was pretty great. And talking about a young Tristan, what I remember most was how he had such like an incredible windup whenever he went to put up a putback, and I'm like, hey, this guy's like a pogo sticker. He's like on a trampoline, but. And then I also remember with young Tristan when he switched his shooting hand for free throw shooting. And like, that was the talk for the longest time. And I got so sick of hearing about it after a while because Tristan was still like free throw. I mean, he was a lot better after he switched his hands, but he still wasn't like world beating. So yeah, it is what it is.
That's right. But yeah, I think this draft is just vitally important. We'll talk more about Kyrie in the coming weeks, but it, you know, I think again, it's just going to go down as one of the most important moments for the Cavs in franchise history and just in so many ways. And we'll surely, I think, we'll be talking about a lot of this coming down the line as we kind of dive more into what we're doing here on the network. But we're going to take a quick break, come back with more Locked On Cavs, and talk a little bit about about the shot that Kyrie hit that is his most famous shot of all time. On the way back in, you're going to hear the Mike Breen call of that shot, just because who doesn't want to hear it again? And we'll be right back.
From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game, well, when you could, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast, and that's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I mean, if you look at me, you really get that idea. I love food, and that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Oh my gosh, I almost lost my breath from the excitement. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it, baby.
Irving and Curry, one-on-one. Irving puts it up. It's good! Kyrie Irving from downtown! And the Cavaliers by three!
And we're back there again. You heard the shot Kyrie hit to win the finals, the most important shot in franchise history. You know, Evan,
I have a thought about this shot, but I just want to say,
when I think about Kyrie, as much as some of the stuff after this isn't optimal, and I think a lot of Cavs fans are very frustrated with him now, all this stuff, when I think of him and when I think of what he meant and how talented he was, I think him just hitting a shot like this and then, you know, the shot he hit in the Christmas game a year later are just such good encapsulations of him. And I think hopefully we get back to a place where like some of the other stuff with him becomes less of a nuance and more of an event. I hope at some point there is some kind of way for us to properly reflect the magnitude of that shot. And certainly so much of that title has gone to LeBron. A lot of the credit does, I think a lot of it deservedly goes to LeBron James because he's the engine of that team. But Kyrie's right there with him. They don't win that series unless he's playing at the level he did. And he hit the most important shot in franchise history. Not LeBron James, not Kevin Love, not Mark Price, not Z. It's Kyrie Irving. He had the most important shot any Cleveland Cavalier will ever hit, and that's just going to be that way forever. He's a part of the franchise's fabric and history for a very good reason.
I think the way Kyrie left, obviously, is going to leave a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths. Like, I don't know, if I threw a general poll up on Twitter, actually, I'll do it after I'm done talking just to see what people think. Like, a lot of people have sour grapes when it comes to Kyrie, just the way he left. And like, I get it. Like, at the time I was upset. Like, I was, as a fan of this team, and you know, especially Kyrie Irving being one of my favorite players just to watch because he's incredible with the basketball in his hand. But I feel like he burned a lot of bridges of this organization on the way out, especially, and like, it definitely hurt. And maybe not hurt, but it was a lot more frustrating when he and LeBron kind of made up when Kyrie was trying to quote unquote teach these damn kids in Boston, and that didn't work out. But I do wish it could work. Like, those two were so special, and it's just, here's my take though. So yes, that shot Kyrie made was the biggest shot in franchise history. It was the shot that won the Cavs the championship. It should immortalize him as an all-time great in Cleveland sports history. The Cavs should have never reissued number 2 to Colin Sexton because of that shot. Colin could work 12 just fine. I don't think Joe Harris's feelings are going to get hurt that bad just out of recent 12s at the top of my head. Like, there's a lot of stuff you can make just because of Kyrie's legacy and just like what he's done for this franchise. Cause like, let's pull it back even further. He pulled this franchise out of the depths of losing LeBron for the first time, where they felt like they had no hope, and gave this team and this fan base hope. And then by the time LeBron came back, he had to grow up his first year and then learned how to play at a superstar level. And then he won a championship for the Cavs. And then, yeah, we don't know the rest of it, but here's my thought. As we know, Kyrie hated playing LeBron's shadow. He hated the little brother. He hated being called the kid and all this other stuff. Imagine if LeBron made that dunk, because nobody would remember that three-pointer by Kyrie. If LeBron made that dunk where he fell down awkwardly and I was convinced he broke his wrist, and imagine how pissed Kyrie would be, like, internally, knowing that he didn't get his chance to be the hero of the situation instead of LeBron. Because like, that's just a hypothetical I've been spinning in my head lately, and I'm like, yeah, Kyrie would be super pissed if LeBron was the one who got all the credit for the championship and he didn't get any admiration at all.
It's an amazing thing to think about.
That dunk would be like one of the greatest dunks in NBA history, because it was so violent.
It's the most memorable.
Yeah.
Just considering the moment and everything like that, and just who was on, and just all kinds of stuff. There's so many layers to that we don't obviously get because of where things go.
Yeah, it's just maybe it's because of the book we're reading too. Like, I started thinking about that again, and like, just behind the scenes and like with the context of it all, because for those of you listening who don't know, I believe Windhorst was the one who has from his sources got Kyrie quoted saying that when the Cavs were flirting with the idea of courting LeBron back, Kyrie was on the record saying that we don't need him. We're fine without him. I can do this myself. Like, he's living up to his childhood hero, Kobe Bryant, there, folks. But there's always a divide between those two. And I think LeBron being LeBron and trying too hard to be, you know, the father figure, quote unquote. And I can't wait to talk about that when we do the book club stuff. And we talk about the reporter who asked Kyrie, what's it like to have a father figure like LeBron in the locker room? And Kyrie has a good relationship with his dad. But Kyrie, that shot was absolutely insane. And like you said, it was, either that shot or the Christmas shot. And there's like plenty of other moments where like Kyrie's just been absolute clutch and like ice in his veins, Mamba mentality, the brightest, the stars shine the brightest on the biggest stage, blah, 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 whatever tired use phrasing you want to use to describe it. Kit, the guy was awesome. And I don't think he gets enough credit. And I feel like you got to take, I know you got to take some of the bad when it comes with Kyrie, but you got to remember there was so much good leading up to especially some of the really bad moments.
There's just an incredible amount of good that I think this is the capstone of it. I mean, this, some of the stuff he did the previous playoff, some of the stuff he would do the next season in that 2017 season that we've talked about and how crazy good that offense was. And he was so much of that. I think the biggest what if, and you know, maybe, and I don't, you know, the Boston stuff, it kind of maybe gives indication, but there's just a lot of what ifs about him and his time in Cleveland, just us not knowing to the full extent what he looks like if they had built around him correctly from the get-go. They do that. I wonder how things turn out. We don't know. I don't think they win a title, but I think it'd be interesting just to know sort of what they would look like pre that, just as we get a better gauge on his impact. And I think that's something that will always probably be there with him until he does something else. I mean, even in Brooklyn, like, he's not the best guy on that team. That's Kevin Durant's team. You know, it's not like it's him and his co-stars. He's the running guy to KD, and that's just going to be part of it. And again, I think that shot, just considering who it's over, the stage of it, I will never not be able to watch that play, along with the stop, along with the block, along with a lot of less like 6 minutes of game seven, and not get chills from it. That's one of those moments that if they ever do a 2016 doc on that, or on LeBron in some kind of it, and or in just something related where we can get more information on Kyrie's mindset on that shot and just what was going on in people's minds as that shot goes in and everything like that, that's one of the few things I could talk about that shot for just ever, depending on who I'm talking to, just based on who I could ask questions to about it and stuff, because it is just something that, I mean, it might be one of the best three shots in NBA history. You know, it's certainly, I think, one of the most iconic ones of the last decade, along with like the Ray Allen three in the corner.
Yeah, no, I agree. That Ray Allen shot was incredible. That, I know we're biased because we're Cavs fans on top of covering this team. So, like, the 2016 Finals for me is the best series ever. But that Spurs Heat series was brutal. Like, I was rewatching some of those games the other day, and I'm like, man, this was a fun basketball series because two just teams at their absolute apex just going throwing haymakers at each other back and forth. So, like, yeah, that Ray Allen shot was huge, but no, that Kyrie shot, you could easily make a case for being one of the biggest shots in NBA history. I mean, there's obviously like Larry Bird stealing the Isaiah Thomas inbound. Like, that's a big shot, like a big iconic moment. Just also, it's because of the legacy franchise. And like, there's plenty of moments with like Kobe and the Lakers as well, just in recent memory that you can think of. But like, no, I think that Kyrie shot is arguably like one of the best moments in NBA history, one of the biggest shots in NBA history. But let me ask you this, Chris, do you think the relationship will ever get better between Kyrie and the franchise? Because from what I last heard, it's obviously still icy. Like, Kyrie has not returned or been in Cleveland ever since
the Gordon Hayward injury.
The Gordon Hayward injury. So, like, people joke about it. Like, if the Cavs did elect to retire his jersey, that Kyrie would just FaceTime in and just watch from a video camera or something. I don't know. I feel like Kyrie's such a weird dude to figure out, because when he reached out to LeBron and apologized, I was kind of holding out hope in the back of my mind that he would reach out to Cleveland. Maybe quell the animosity with Cleveland fans, and maybe there's the franchise as a whole. Maybe he has, but I don't know. Like, I just would like them to have a good relationship, because I don't know how much longer Kyrie has. He strikes me as a dude who, when he's done, and he could be done within the next 2 or 3 years, because he's flirted the idea of retirement before and retiring early and enjoying his life. But I would just like to say that him and the Cavs have a decent enough relationship so that when they retire his number two, maybe they can recruit another player when they do it. But there's just no animosity between the two, so it just isn't as awkward and uncomfortable as it feels right now. Do you think it's possible that that happens?
I think time can heal all wounds. Obviously, I think there is some who bridges the gap, and how that happens will be really interesting. I don't quite know, but I do hope so. I'm right there with you. I think it'd be really, really good if we could see that gap bridge. I've long been fascinated by how the fans would react to Kyrie the next time he plays in Cleveland. I don't suspect that it's going to be all positive, which is not fun.
No, I don't even know what the reaction would be. It's been so long that I'm sure he'd get booze, but it'll never be at the level when like LeBron first came back.
That's one of the worst moments for. That's one of the worst looks Cavs fans have ever had. It's the first LeBron game back.
I thought, well, thankfully you said Cavs fans and not Cleveland fans. Cause I'm like, yeah, the Browns just can kind of dominate the top 10. Like the beer bottle gate, that will always be up there for me. But yeah, I don't know. I wish things would work out, but Kyrie's just such a weird person to like really get a read on and like actually know what he's thinking and what he's feeling that I really can't say like, yeah, no, they can squash the beef and just kind of move forward and be adults about this because that Brooklyn team is just going to be fascinating, man, especially when him and Kevin Durant are back. Like, I hope it works because it'd be fun basketball, but the locker room dynamic is going to be so toxic. And I think for a lot of us who are here for the hashtag this league moments, a lot of these this league moments are going to be coming out of Brooklyn next year. And maybe that's kind of a relieving thing that it's not coming out of Cleveland anymore.
That's, I think, right. Okay, one last break. We'll be back with more Locked On Cavs right after this. And we're back. Evan, let's talk about the 2014 draft lottery when the Cavs win the lottery. The pick obviously becomes Kevin Love, but it's truly one of the more remarkable things to think about because just bits of luck because, number one, some of the reporting, and some of this is in Return of the King, which, again, we'll be back with our book club on Friday. Check out our first episode of our book club last Friday if you haven't already. But some of the reporting in there is that the Wolves weren't willing to trade Kevin Love for anything less than a top three pick. The Cavs coming into this had a 1.7% chance of getting the number one pick, and they get it. And you know, if they pick late in the lottery, if they don't have, if they have to give up more future picks, or you know, Deion, you know, certainly becomes useful in trades later. But you probably get maybe, I don't know what's, there's just a lot of effects with other trades that if you don't get that pick and have that chip to use to get Kevin Love. I wonder what the deal that probably happens anyway because LeBron was asking for it looks like. And it's, again, like, you know, the Wiggins stuff is what it is. You obviously do the trade 10 times out of 10. I think you get Kevin Love and you worry about the rest later considering the injury concerns about Embiid at the time and Wiggins and, like, I, you know, Wiggins being a rookie and then and Jabari, the whole thing about him taking his workouts and stuff. Like, I think with this, it's you get that pick, you make the trade. And it's truly, I just don't know how, I wonder what that deal looks like, assuming it still happens if they don't win this lottery. And I think that for that reason alone, it's just because it gets you Kevin Love and what Kevin Love has meant the last, you know, 6-7 years, whatever it is, that really matters.
No, it really does. And you want to know what the craziest thing is? The Cavs had a 1.7% chance of getting the first overall pick in this year's draft, that year's draft. And in all likelihood, they would have been picking 9th overall. And in that case, you're looking at players like Noah Vonleh, Elfrid Payton, Doug McDermott, Dario Saric, and Zach LaVine, just to list off the 9 players picked in that area code. Yeah, no, that's definitely not going to get you Kevin Love by itself. And for context, if for those of you who aren't reading along, the Cavs, more or less, it felt like we're going to trade for Love. It just kind of feels like that's a David Griffin move. He's trying to, his MO for that summer wasn't, I mean, obviously, if he got LeBron's attention and attraction, was able to bring LeBron here, great. But like Griffin's overall goal that summer, and you could kind of see it in the moves of acquiring Spencer Hawes and Luol Deng during his beginning of his tenure as the general manager of the Cavs. Like, he was trying to put together a playoff caliber roster, and trading for Kevin Love, who is arguably a top 10 player in the league at the time, was putting up a lot of empty numbers in Minnesota, but was absolutely dominant. You would make that trade no matter what, and like they couldn't get a verbal agreement for Love to stay here long term, and like you just kind of take a gamble and see where you're at, and maybe like you risk giving up Wiggins for it. But like, that was Griffin's stance, and I know other people in the organization had pause on it because they viewed Wiggins as a legitimate two-way player, and funny how things work out now. But yeah, no, if the Cavs didn't get this first pick, none of what transpired that summer would have been able to happen. And I feel pretty firm in saying that because Anthony Bennett was just a throw-in, it feels like, just to get him out of here and maybe like let him get a fresh start with a new team, and he didn't, and he's a G League warrior now, which is just like, Anthony Bennett's career is really sad. Maybe we should like have a breakdown segment. I don't think I could do a full 30 minutes on Anthony Bennett, but I could talk about him for a while. But Yeah, no. Getting the first overall pick and drafting Wiggins, I think everyone knew about the time free agency started, because there wasn't a – you had an idea that LeBron was coming back, and it wasn't for sure. But then, like, by the time free agency was about to start to gear up, like, okay, he's probably coming back. And then you knew Wiggins' time was short in Cleveland, which, like, you feel bad for him for that. But obtaining this pick and, you know, just kind of beating out the odds, especially such incredibly low odds, to be able to put together this championship core and, like, assemble the big three like you have, like – it's not possible by this luck the Cavs have had, and maybe that's why their luck is dried out now and they can't land a first pick in the biggest draft year in recent since 2003 last year. But whatever, I'm not bitter, man. It's not like I wanted Zion worse than anything in Cleveland. But anyways, no, this was up there. This is a top moment in terms of draft history for the Cavs. I don't know exactly where you'd want to put it on the grand scheme of things, but it's definitely up there.
Probably be top five, top six.
Okay, so I need somebody else to confirm kind of what I was feeling. I didn't want to sound like a total jackass here. Yeah, no, top five, top six.
I think.
Yeah, because, yeah, no, getting Kevin Love, none of it would be possible without obtaining the draft rights to Andrew Wiggins or Joel Embiid or Jabari Parker. Like, yeah, no, it was that was an exciting moment. And then even in, like, the other thing, you can say, what if the Cavs didn't trade for Kevin Love? Like, you have a lot of promising young pieces coached by a coach in David Blatt who really connected and vibed with Kyrie and Dion based on, like, listening / reading The Return of the King. Like, you hear a lot about that. And I think that would have been a fun team as well. Like, I don't know where their peak or their ceiling would be. They obviously wouldn't be a title threat in my heart, but will be a fun, promising team, and just kind of interesting to see where the Cavs go from there. But, you know, when LeBron says he's coming back, you just got to go all in. And it's like that meme, fuck them kids. So, like, you don't look back. Like, you strip down everything you have to build a championship caliber roster around him. And the Cavs did exactly that. And obtaining Wiggins was the second starting point of that, because Kyrie and Tristan obviously were the first.
So, yeah, I think that's all correct. And I think, too, just with this draft, with, you know, what it set off, what it sort of meant, and just sort of like just thinking about what, and even just the fact that, like, let's say LeBron, there's a world where it doesn't exist, LeBron, like, isn't coming back or whatever, just something like that. The fact that they won a lottery with 1.7 odds is just the best luck you can ever get. Now, Wiggins is what he is, and that's not a...
Yeah, but at the time, he was, like, an I couldn't, can't right,
like,
prospect.
Mabel Jordan was, like, the bad nickname, but when you just think about winning another lottery and the luck that it takes, and obviously you got the Bennett lottery, which is its own bag of can of worms, and getting the Kyrie lottery and the luck that it gets, you know, obviously LeBron washes away a lot of the mistakes, but winning another lottery is just in itself, like, a massive, massive thing. Sometimes it's winning the right one. Sometimes it's kind of navigating the picks and kind of doing the right thing. Certainly, I think in this, it's just you won one at the right time. And but it's fun. It's just, I think, worth noting. It just winning a lottery in general gives you something that you can't get when you pick eighth or pick ninth. Like, it gives you a shot at something that you need to be a really, really elite franchise. And Wiggins is what he is. But at the time, again, like, he was the guy for, I think, very, very logical, fair reasons. It just obviously worked out that Embiid's the best guy in that draft class by a wide margin.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel like if Embiid didn't have that health scare, and I think he had the health scare when he was working out for the Cavs. Like, I was almost certain the Cavs were going to draft Embiid up at that point. And I'm like, all right, no, then Embiid's the guy. Like, I'm all for it. Like, watch that dream shake he made when he was playing for Kansas. Like, that was a lot of fun to watch. I'm like, all right, I'm here for it. Like, Tristan, I love you. Maybe he can be a four next to Joel or something. But yeah, no, Andrew Wiggins is what he is now. And, like, we have a better idea what kind of player he is. But at the time, the potential and just, you know, all the highlight tapes and stuff that were just hyping him up so hardcore to, like, the media and everybody else, like, I think that also definitely helped too, that, you know, push the trade forward, because, again, Kevin Love was a top 10 player in the league at the time, and Minnesota was asking for a lot for him for good reason, and the potential of Wiggins just kind of sealed that trade, and it was a pretty clean move for the Cavs, and I don't think the Cavs regret it. I think maybe Minnesota regrets it, because Glenn Taylor begged him, Andrew Wiggins, to just try for once, which, you know, is never a good look for your one of your top players. But yeah, no, worked out for the Cavs. Didn't work out for Minnesota, but I think, I hope at least maybe the Timberwolves are starting to bounce back, but we'll see what happens. But yeah, no, it was just an incredibly, it was incredible luck. And I think it was, it's, I don't know off the top of my head if Chicago had the same odds when they got the draft rights to Derrick Rose, but it's up there in terms of just like upsets in the lottery. Like I remember I was stunned the Cavs actually got the first pick. Like I was convinced like the Cavs are going to get a marginal role player out of this draft and we just move on with life. But okay. Can't say the Cavs ever, I don't know. Maybe the Cavs can get a little more of that draft luck now, which would be a lot more fun, but we'll see.
Yeah. Any final 2014 draft thoughts as we get out of here?
I gotta look at the other players drafted because I'm sure I had a take at the time. Dante Exum. I remember everybody thought he was gonna be like the next greatest thing, and like, and now he's at the Cavs. Like injuries have kind of ravaged his career, but I do remember that year's NBA 2K when you were a rookie player. He was like your shit talking rival, and I had like a deep seated hatred in like the back of my mind for Dante Exum for a while because he would just talk so much shit to me and like just tell me I was trash to my face. So. That's where I'm at. But overall, Dante Exum's a good guy now that he's a Cavalier. If he wasn't, maybe I still have a little bit of hatred in my heart. What about you?
They got the second pick right. It just didn't work out and for them. That's what I feel about it. I think the logic behind the Joe Harris pick really was smart, and it just didn't work out.
It was. I just think if Joe Harris didn't have his injury problems like he did in Cleveland, like he would have stuck here because – Smoking Joe Harris was a lot of fun to watch when he was healthy and functional with the Cavs. And then obviously now, like, he is absolutely incredible for Brooklyn. And, you know, if he ever became available somehow, if the Cavs could find a way to bring him home, it would make my heart pretty happy. I think it would make your heart happy too, yeah, Chris.
Absolutely. If they could figure that out and the money will be tight this summer, everything. But that's a really useful immediate player. The Cavs could, I think, certainly use a guy with his skill set to kind of make things work a little bit better. So bring him home, mid-level exception, call it in. All right, that's going to be it for today's show. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. I have a fun guest book that you'll find out about once we drop the show. But thanks again for listening. Follow along with us on Twitter at LockedOnCavs. Chapters, I believe, 3 and 4 for the book club on Friday. And we'll be back with more Locked On Cavs very soon. Thanks again for listening. For myself, for Evan, have a good one.